body in the house, and we have hospital set up in the room today. We will give the opportunity to all two of you before we can engage or ask questions from you. The apologies that I have today is only one member of parliament, Honorable Unity. There is also an apology of the chairperson of Kisita. He has apologized. I think his reasons are valid because he's involved in some of the other chapters, you know, something, but they are involved in negotiations. So I've allowed him in consultation with his department that he can be upset, but the whole decision is that he was led by the ex-CEO. The data that will start is the subject, we call it the subject, and the CEO is Mr. Baloyi. Baloyi. And Mr. Baloyi, and you must introduce the whole information that you put today.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm not sure if I'm laudable. Thank you very much, Chair, for according us this opportunity to present in front of the Portfolio Committee on Labour. But before I start with my presentation, let me indicate to the committee the delegation that is accompanying me to today from the Safety and Security CETA. On my immediate left, I have Mr. Kolile Mashukuka, is our Deputy Chairperson. Followed by Mr. Luvuyo Mboniswa, who's our Chief Financial Officer. Then we have Ms. Tezi Mabuza, who's our Senior Manager of Skills Development and Administration. We have Mr. Soling Washeng, who is our Senior Manager Skills Development Implementation and Monitoring. And lastly, on the extreme left, we have Mr. Kabelo Masilo, who's our Head of Department Skills Administration. Chair, I must indicate that we had forwarded a presentation that was very detailed, but I think on this presentation, because of time and other constraints, I will just stick out very key important issues for the committee. I'm going to look at the background, the CETA financial status, also report in terms of the CETA performance, give an indication of the leading paying entities within the Safety and Security CETA, talk to achievements and challenges, refer to the training layoff scheme, and then talk about the future and current development. SAFCETA is the CETA that emerged out of the amalgamation of the two CETAs that had existed then, POSLEC and DIDETA. Then from the 1st of July, we then started to have a SAFCETA with a specific focus on the newly defined sector of safety and security. In total, we have 84 staff members, myself as the CEO. I'm supported by three senior managers, including the rest of the staff, as indicated in that slide. Then, in terms of the equity profile of the institution, 35% male, 65% female, and people with disabilities, 4%. Then the composition of the CETA, the governance members, we have got roughly 28 board members who are selected from the chambers indicated, the legal fraternity, the corrections, the lead department there is Department of Corrections, Defense, the lead department is the Department of Defense and Military Affairs, South African Police Services, Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Intelligence Chamber, the lead department is State Security, and then lastly we have Private Security. So each chamber basically nominates four board members, two from employers and two from organized labor, who are then mandated to represent them in the main board. In terms of our funding formula, this is the percentage allocation we have for the chambers. 29% of the allocation goes to private security, 24% to the legal, 18% to policing, 8% to defense corrections, 8% as well, statutory intelligence, 4%. I think I need to indicate that the private sector chambers who are actually levy paying firms are basically the private security and legal. The rest are government departments. As you know, that in terms of the skills development rate, like regulation, government is exempted from paying the levy. They actually contribute 10% of the 1% in terms of contributing to the overall administration of the CETA. What we have got this annual service level agreement with state departments that ensures that we get the transfers that emanate from state corpus being transferred to the CETA to assist us with our administration cost. Then in terms of the financial status, up to 31st March 2009. For the financial year 8-9, we had a total income of 885 million, and our spending rate was basically 81%. The year before that, which is 7-8, our total allocation was 171 million. And we had achieved a 90% spending rate. Then just a quick comment on the financial results is that the CETA is spending the administration cost within the restricted 10% in terms of the regulation. We have paid out more than 70% in terms of mandatory grants. We have paid out more than 90% in terms of allocation of discretionary grants. And we have a very strong focus on the management of funds prudence in terms of the PFMA. Then can I also indicate to the members that the Auditor General gave us an unqualified audit opinion. And this has been taking place over the last 4 or 5 financial years since the CETA was established. We never had a qualified audit report. We have addressed, you know, major audit findings that were basically raised by the AG. With the latest audit report for 8-9, I must indicate that we were given an unqualified report without emphasis of matter, which is quite a very significant improvement in terms of our governance issues and how we are handling issues relating public finance. I will then move over to indicate, you know, the status quo in terms of CETA performance since 2005 up to March 2009. This data that stands in front of us here is the data that has been verified by the Department of Labor in terms of their CETA performance monitoring tool. So here we are reporting over the five-year targets. The targets where you see negative or minuses is targets where we have overachieved in those areas. In targets where there's a positive balance, it means the CETA has got to work towards addressing those particular targets. You all know that the current NSDS to expire in March 2010, so it means by the end of March next year, we should have moved significantly to address some of those outstanding balance in terms of our commitment to the SLA targets. I'll sit out quickly, for instance, if you look at 2.8, where our target was 10,530 learners, we actually overachieved that by 5,000. I'll then move over to the other indicators as well, pick out 4.1, which is basically training of the unemployed into learning programs, where our target was 10,000, and then we also overachieved by 5,000, and we still have got a balance to make in terms of these other indicators, which are also crucial, which I think we have the opportunity to address them as we move towards the end of the NSDS 2 with the remaining months that are waiting us. Then we have also dissected the performance information in terms of the histogram that is indicated there, indicating the financial year 7, 8, and 8, 9, just to give an indication in terms of the level of performance over the years. That slide as well also indicates some of the indicators that were actually achieved over these financial years indicated there. 7 and 8. Then this is the number of employers accessing our mandatory grants for the year 07-08. Large firms was 187, medium firms 118, and small 204. In the year 8-9, we had large firms 166, medium 129, and small 238. Then, Chair, I will also give an indication to say to what extent is the CETA contributing to the government program of action, specifically government priorities. We have programs that are aligned to the justice crime prevention and the security cluster. Part of the priority there is the transformation of the criminal justice system. As a CETA responsible, you know, for the safety and security, we have to align our skills development interventions to those priorities. If you look at the objective that talks to the improvement of the efficiency of the courts, we have implemented the court service management learnership, where we have trained court managers who are managing courts to deal with court administration, sorting out issues of delays in court, and making sure that we build management capacity of courts. Then we have had the court interpreting leadership. Basically, the intention of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development was to say, let's have a program that would assist the public in terms of accessing justice and courts in terms of their own languages. So we have got currently 100 learners that have been trained in terms of that particular learnership throughout the country. One of the key areas as well within the Department of Constitutional Development was the issue of creation of the dedicated courts with a specific focus on women and on children. We have got the family law learnership that focus on that particular priority team. The other area was the transformation of the legal profession, how the people from the disadvantaged background are able to access the legal profession. As a CETA, we are contributing towards funding the candidate attorney learnership. For the first time in our country, we had a qualification for the sheriff. All of us know, in terms of where we come from, that this particular sector has been a sector that has had a history of a disrespect for human rights. Now sanity is beginning to prevail, that we have, for the first time, sheriffs being trained to do their work in a way that actually conforms to the constitution of this country. Then in terms of the objective on crime prevention, the CETA is responsible for accrediting the National Basic Policing Certificate. I think this is where you see the annual intake of the South African Police Services, so we accredit that particular qualification. So in terms of the government forecast, that it is expected that the South African Police Services will increase its recruits to 180,000 over the next 2 years of the medium term expenditure framework. And all these learners will be certificated by SACETA. We have a learnership that is resolving of crime related to crime prevention. We also implemented one of the very exciting learnership, forensic science learnership, whose purpose is basically to boost the forensic capabilities of the police services in helping them dealing with the very serious matters of crime investigation. Then we are also supporting NGOs that are operating within the crime prevention area, including support in terms of skills and development for community police forum. Then in terms of the objective on law enforcement operations, the CETA is responsible for accrediting firearm training providers, also certifying learners who are trained in terms of the firearm unit standards. All those particular projects have been the projects that have been undertaken in the justice, crime and security cluster. Then the regulation of the private security industry, which is a key project. As we all know, that the training in the security industry has been largely been the grade training. So that type of training is now coming to an end, and now we're now introducing the training that is NQF aligned, which will be basically be accredited by SACETA. The old dispensation required that the grade system will then be accredited by CIRA, the institution responsible for the regulation of the private security industry. Now that grade training is coming to an end, the whole quality assurance in terms of the training in the private security industry will then be transferred to SACETA. But all these attempts are attempts aimed at making sure that we professionalize the private security industry. We also been assisting as well in terms of assisting the Department of Correctional Services implement the white paper on corrections. We have introduced the corrections science learnership, the auxiliary social work learnership. All these are programs aimed at helping with the rehabilitation of offenders in correctional institutions. then upholding of national security. We also have got learning programs within the National Intelligence Agency. We have not listed the programs, as you know, that most of the information there is classified chain. Then 1.8, we also assisting military veterans. The CETA has been in the forefront of applying to NSF, and we have been given an amount of 6 million that has been spent already on the training of military veterans throughout the country. We have been involved in terms of discussing training requirements with individual military veterans association. We have also been in contact with the military veterans directorate within the Department of Defense, and at this moment, as we speak, that directorate has been elevated to higher level, because the Department of Defense is now called Defense and Military Affairs, meaning that the military veterans issues are now gaining momentum and importance within government. So as a CETA, we have at the moment funding that we are, you know, we are directing to military veterans through our discretionary funding. We also deal with supporting, you know, providers with accreditation for the national key points. Those will include training providers that are training in issues of border control and strategic key points of government. Then the other area as well, which is very important, was the involvement of the CETA in terms of the 2010 World Cup. We have to fund the Security Cluster Department 2010 Action Plan. We have to assist with the development of learning material for the 2010 Security Steward Training Program. Make sure that we do quality assurance for that particular qualification. We are also funding the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development 2010 Volunteer Program for mobile courts that will be operating in the host cities. Then in terms of ensuring priority skills for the economy, particularly those particular areas that have been identified by SGISA and GIFSA, we have had quite a number of programs, particularly the artisan apprenticeship training programs that are running in the Department of Defense, policing, and Department of Correctional Services. We've been also been involved in the pilot training, which is a very scarce skill within the security, safe and security environment. And I think we're pleased to say that we have been the first CETA in this regard to produce the first black woman pilot up to so far. Then also in terms of the second economy interventions, we have had a role in terms of contributing to the Standard Public Work Program. At the moment, we have entered into partnership with the Department of Public Works to basically support EPWP training providers to basically diversify their training towards safety and security programs. You all know that the programs supported by EPWP are short-term in nature, and the public works then came to us to say if we can have some kind of an exit strategy for those type of individuals participating in the programs, who can then branch to other important, you know, skills in terms of safety and security. We have been also, I think, contributed extensively in terms of running the ABLE program. But however, I must indicate that the challenges I think that we face in terms of ABLE are quite similar to what other CETAs are undergoing. In terms of contributing to good governance, dealing with equity, issues of equity, the safety and security sector has been a largely male-dominated terrain. And when you look at our equity statistics, I mean, we have done tremendously well in terms of striking the balance, especially in terms of gender, making sure that a lot of women come into SASITA accredited programs. However, a challenge remains in terms of addressing, you know, the equity that speaks to people with disabilities. Then we have also been responding to the skills audit of the government department, particularly those in safety and security, making sure that we address those gaps and critical skills that have been identified. Also implemented a capacity building program for the training committees in the safety and security cluster. The CITA as well has been involved in commissioning a study on the impact of AIDS and its implications for skills requirements in the safety and security sector, and we are currently looking at a plan to implement some of these recommendations emanating from this particular research as well. Then quickly go through the achievements that we think are quite relevant to raise here. That the CITA has been having a very consistent CITA performance as measured by the Department of Labor. We have had very consistent successes of getting an unqualified audit opinion. We have had a good placement rate of learners, particularly in government departments, because these huge intakes of learners who come into corrections, police, the defense, they actually get absorbed 100%. We have had recognition of Institute of Occupational and Excellence, ISOEs. At the moment, the CITA is recognized up to seven, and the majority of those are providers within the policing fraternity. We have also had a very sound, grounded, managed support functions. We have not absorbed, our key support functions. We still have our finances, our HR, our marketing. So the CITA has got a very sound infrastructure in terms of managing these support functions. Then, Chair, allow me to now close over to the issue that deals with our contribution to the training lay of scheme. The fundamental question I think to ask is to say, what are the effects of the current recession in the safety and security sector? Is the safety and security sector a distressed or troubled sector? Is the safety and security sector shedding jobs? And at this stage, I must indicate that there is no conclusive evidence that the sector is at risk. I will indicate here anticipated growth in government expenditure on safety and security over the medium-term expenditure framework. Combined police, prisons, and courts, they intend to spend about 62 billion in the financial year 9-10, and increasing that by 10% to 69 billion for the financial year 9-10. The defense and intelligence as well will spend for 9-10 30 billion. For 2010-11, there will be 35 billion, which is basically about 5% increment in terms of overall government expenditure on safety and security. So the effect, the spillover effects of that in the economy is that you have increased employment, you have increased demand for learning programs, meaning that there will be more learners coming into the learning programs, there'll be a higher placement rate in terms of people gaining access to permanent government employment. But you must also indicate that the CETA does as well complement the training budget, you know, for government. The issue is here that although like the budget for security departments has increased, I mean, substantially, the training budget has remained constant. Sometimes, you know, that budget will be even be less than 1% of the payroll. Then so far, the process undertaken by the CETA, we have already engaged the legal and private security chambers, because they are the only private sector sectors you know, likely to be affected. The indication is that the impact is not yet clear, because we have been trying to get statistics from the UIF commissioner, including Statistics South Africa. Both chambers wanted their constituencies to further consult on the training layoff guidelines, and the chambers in this regard have actually agreed to form a committee to further explore this matter. Then it's also critical to say, what is it as the CETA that we are committing to this particular process? Firstly, we are saying that we want to support parties in the safety and security sector who are voluntarily giving notice to access the training layoff scheme. Would also assist in terms of the mass communication, focusing on the affected employers within safety and security. Would also facilitate the training training provision through the alignment of the WSPs that the employers are submitting to us. Deal with issues of funding training costs and providing the leadership grant. At the moment, the CETA is reviewing its budget for discretionary grant, and there are indications that we will be able to provide and set aside, you know, funding for this particular purpose. Then other strategies that we think are important is that we would want to be in a position that we identify the skills that are transferable to occupations in demand in other safety and security sub-sectors. Will also assist in terms of marketing dislocated workers to other private or public employers. Also provide an on-site one-stop advisory services for affected employees. Here what we mean is that those affected employees might need a variety of advice, whether, you know, it's dealing with career guidance, dealing with issues of reskilling, dealing with issues of financial management, or your life skill support kind of programs being built in, but in a kind of a one-stop service. The CETA is also involved in a number of provincial skills development forums in various provinces, where interventions are being discussed, particularly around those LEDs where there's a downturn in terms of the economy. Then what we anticipate that in terms of outcome is the issues of re-employment, that we must have job retention, that we must have a minimal economic downturn in terms of the impact of recession, but also attain better skilled employees. Then in terms of the current development, Chair, I think, which is my last slide, the CETA, of course, like other CETAs, we did make an application for the CETA certification. We are looking forward with confidence, and we have had tremendous support from our stakeholders, you know, supporting our application for recertification. We have submitted to Department of Labor the corporate plan for 2010 and 2011. And as well, I think I must indicate that the constituencies within the safety and security, our board has also endorsed the transition that is taking place with maximum support, looking forward to go to the Department of Higher Education and Training. But also our appreciation as well, Chair, goes to the Department of Labor for the kind of support that they've given the sector over the last years, particularly the sector liaison managers that have been allocated to assist us with strategic and administrative issues. Chair, you will indicate that I didn't speak much in terms of a challenge, I think, that was previously raised by the portfolio committee. It was a challenge that related to provincial presence, because as a city, we are a city that is located in Gauteng, in Johannesburg. To say, what are we doing in terms of ensuring that we have got a very prominent, you know, national focus in the country, where I think our board took a very concise decision, firstly to say that we put up a feasibility study in terms of finding out whether we can begin to, you know, open this particular regional offices, but also make sure that we use the infrastructure of our stakeholders to make sure that we reach some of our beneficiaries in the rural areas and in the remote part of our country. So, Chair, I think this completes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Balon, for the good presentation. We go to our second speaker, which is the speaker that I mentioned earlier on,
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are ready. I would first like to start by thanking you, Chairperson, for inviting us to come here today. The apologies that have been referred to earlier. I'm accompanied here with a delegation which is by senior management. My name is Johannes Rantete. I'm the new acting CEO for PFITA. Recently been appointed starting in July this year, having been the advisor to the Minister for Public Service and Administration since last year. The issues in PFITA, Chairperson, as you know, the PFITA is not structured in the same way as the other CETAs. There have been challenges there, which I will allude to. But firstly, with regard to our presentation, as there was no format in terms of presentations, our presentation obviously will not be the same as the previous presentation. Our presentation is going to be zooming straightly in terms of what is our response to the training layoff scheme. However, the report in terms of our activities, it's available in a separate presentation which we can make available to members separately, but we'll just specifically deal with the issues that relate to the training layoff. As you know, the PFITA is currently operating under the DPSA. It's not yet a standalone CETA like other CETAs. We are currently trying to make sure that it's severed from the DPSA, so that it begins to stand on its own. There have been challenges in PFITA, as you remember, especially with regard to the management of the funds in PFITA. There have been cases of an official who was involved in the fraudulent activities in PFITA, who was subsequently arrested and currently serving a jail term for having stolen money from the funds from the PFITA. The minister, when he came in,
I'm glad that you didn't hear, but I heard you requesting the gentleman to do likewise as the previous sitter in introducing the delegation. I only heard him saying that he is accompanied by senior management, so I assume that the lady next to him is senior management, and the gentleman is senior management, and the gentleman in the father is senior management. They are
No, I was still going to
say. The name is management.
Sorry, I was still coming to come to that. I was just concluding the introductory part. Obviously, I will introduce the lady. Thanks for that. We'll come to that. I was just making this brief introduction, then we'll introduce them. Just for members to understand the PFITA, how it's structured, because it's differently structured like other CETAs. Also, in terms of its resources, it's the most underfunded CETA in all the CETAs that are there because of the funding mechanism that has been put there. That it's not a levy-based CETA. So there are those kind of complications that are there. Nevertheless, as I mentioned earlier, that we're trying to make sure that it stands on its own, and the minister has already started that process that will begin to make sure that it gets it starts to be independent. Coming to my senior managers, of course, the first lady, who's the senior manager, name and surname, is Ms. Mamelo Mohammed. It's our senior manager for learning programs, and followed by a gentleman there, also a senior manager, Mr. Zamo Kuzwayo, responsible for the ETQA. Then we also have got Mem Lekhetile Motwa, who is responsible for our grants disbursement. And then we've got Mr. Joshua Mandishona,
our CFO. So this is the team that will be accompanying me and will be assisting me. They are all senior managers. In terms of our presentation, as I said, we will just zoom in terms of the issues that we're supposed to deal with. The outline of the presentation is as follows. We'll look briefly at the establishment, the vision and the mission, the scope of coverage, the main parameters that falls under us, the training level scheme, and then the interventions that we are working on, as well as the structures that support the plan. Now, the PCTAS establishment, PCTAS mandate is, of course, in terms of the Skills Development Act. Its current tenure is from 1 July 2005 up to 31st March 2010. It was established with the exception that it is not a levied income-based CETA, but operates through an allocation from National Treasury via the DPSA, which mainly provides for employee compensation and operations and not training implementation. For 2010, the allocation amount to only 21 million. So the bulk of the funding actually resides with the respective departments and the parastatals. We only do the coordination. It is also established in terms of Section 5.1b of SAQA Act as an ETQA body. In terms of its vision, the vision is to meet the current and future public sector needs for skilled and competent workers through the effective provision of quality assured, relevant and accessible education and training. And the mission is to develop a dedicated, skilled and productive public service workforce through the effective coordination of skills development, continued education, learnerships and training programs for workers in the public service. In terms of our scope of coverage, we have got all national departments, all provincial departments, Department of Trade and Industry, and the Department of Foreign Affairs, and then the parastatals not elsewhere classified, identified national departments 100% such as DPSA, Home Affairs, Department of Labor, other departments for transverse skills, e.g. SMS and MMS, in particular around policy development, strategic planning and management, leadership, client service, administration and project management. Our main parastatals are the National Nuclear Regulator, the Competition Tribunal, the Gauteng Partnership Trust, and the EU Legislature Support Program. Now, in terms of the training layoff scheme, like I said, I'm not going to be delving on the performance and whatever is in the other report, but in terms of the training layoff scheme, firstly, what we want to say is that the training layoff scheme as defined will not necessarily apply to the public service. Most institutions falling under our scope of coverage are not facing distress as described in the scheme. Nevertheless, as PCTA, we have a role to play in advancing the objectives of the scheme, especially in developing the skills of those employees who will be affected by the layoffs even in other sectors. So the position that we've taken as PCTA is to say, even if it does not directly affect us, but as a government program and being a government institution, we can't sit back and say it does not apply to us. We have to do something to make sure that we advance the whole program and objective of the scheme. Now, we have identified an amount of 5 million in our discretionary fund, which we could use as a response to this initiative. PCTA views the scheme to be one that will go beyond the 3 month period. Hence, its planned intervention is to ensure that targeted employees should end up being gainfully employed or re-employed. Now, in terms of our intervention plan, these are the key areas that we've identified in terms of the kind of contribution we can make. Firstly, we're saying that we need to identify distress levels amongst the parastatals that are registered with PCTA, with a view to supporting training of affected employees. Because at least in the parastatals, it's not like in the government department. In some parastatals may be faced with difficulties of having to retrench or maybe suspend or put off some of the programs. That may have an impact on the workers. So we'll have to assess the distress level there. The survey being conducted is being conducted and will be done by the end of October. this year. Secondly, our major intervention is to partner with the local government sector to adopt one municipality to offer assistance to address complaints coming out of the recent protests targeted at the lack of service delivery, so that we can be able to see if whether in certain areas where there are shortages of service delivery, we can be able to help upskill those employees that are affected there. We are hoping that the agreement with the city will be concluded by mid-October 2009. The third leg is to partner with energy sector to adopt 10 small electrical contractors that are in distress with a view to assisting them to apply for the scheme funding through the CCMA process. As you know, in terms of the scheme, the CCMA is playing a central role in terms of coordinating the applications to deal with issues of consultation and issues of agreement. So we are saying that there may be those that may need assistance, and we are available to be able to assist in that regard. That agreement with the CETA, we are hoping that we can be able to conclude it somewhere in mid-October 2009. We are also looking at the issue of requesting proposals from all national and provincial departments that might have challenges of supernumerary employees who could be retrained. I think members of the committee will know that in government you have this thing called supernumerary employees. That's employees that you can't fit in the structure, but those people do have certain qualifications. So the issue is that rather than putting them off, you can go into a program where you can reskill them and redirect them to certain areas where they may be needed. So that's the area that we'll be making intervention. And the proposals are to reach PCTA by the 23rd of October 2009. By then we'll then have an idea in terms of the volume of employees that needs to be accommodated. We are also looking at the issue of the recognition of prior learning for redirecting skills development. This project will be implemented at staggered phases depending on the response that will be received. Also, we are partnering with the FET colleges to link learners completing the National Certificate on Vocational Training with the departments for placement. The survey is currently being conducted and will be done end of October. I think one area that we are trying to address is that in the public service and maybe elsewhere, you find that an institution spends money in terms of training learners through learnership and whatever, but then when you come in terms of absorbing those people, you've got the challenges that some of these people still need to go through the normal process of being interviewed and appointed through the system. Through that process, some way you find that some are not accommodated, they are not absorbed, which therefore translates to a situation where you have made investment which you are not able to use. So that area we need to be able to look at it and see how we can be able to cover it. Well, we will also be partnering with other sectors to use the sector as a workplace learning to provide the requisite skills. As part of our program, we'll be interacting with the CCMA to determine the people that have been retrenched who have particular skills but have not done the trade test. This is another major area where you've got people who go and get trained but they get frustrated because they don't get the trade test. So we're thinking that we can make an intervention there and make sure that those people are assisted to be able to get the trade test. Our support will be to help them to do trade tests and avail them for take-up by those government departments that need their skills. Our sector skills plan will also help us target such employees. The projected time frame for this is the end of September. Now, overall, in terms of all this that we intend to do, we are thinking that the preliminary work should actually be completed end of October 2009, so that we can be able to kickstart and move forward. Now, with regard to the RPL strategy, where we are saying that we need to redirect workers through recognition of prior learning, our intention is to reskill and upskill those workers by offering those workers by officially recognizing the skills that workers may have obtained during their life experience. Now, workers with officially recognized skills will be redirected to sectors not severely affected by the recession. Upskilled workers may be redeployed at higher skilled required levels and encourage self-employment. Now, the PCTA will partner with sectors such as the Department of Public Works and the Government Garage, who have already identified focus areas and requisite skills to jointly fund such projects in terms of this mechanism. Now, in terms of the structures that will support our intervention is the Grant Disbursement Fund, which so far has got an amount of 5 million, which will assist us to be able to do this coordination. And then the Grant Disbursement Policy, which needs to be amended to incorporate support for the training layoff scheme. And then the Training Layoff Implementation Committee, which will oversee the implementation of the plan. So that's the presentation, Chairperson. We'll await the discussion. Thanks.
Thank you.
Manager.
Can we go to the last chair, Tisha? Which is the done for the education and training by Ms. Manikela Machada. Please, I'm sure you remember the management with me.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the transport seater side, I've got a delegation that comprises two board members and three managers. On my name is Maplifo Matlala, and on my right, I've got the Chairperson of the TITA board, Mr. Gavin Leru, and on his, in fact, it's not my right, my left. on his left, we've got the Chief Operating Officer of TITA, Mr. Kanzi Mukhomozi. On his left, we've got the CFO of TITA, Mr. Thokozani Kibeka. And on the extreme left, we've got another member of the TITA board who is standing in for the Vice Chair of TITA, Mr. June Dube. And his name is Mr. Sakipro. So they clearly have got names. Without any waste of time, I would like to start with our presentation. What we've got to do is to really just give a broad overview of what TITA stands for, what its vision and mission is, how we organize as an organization, and what our mandate is. Then we'll zoom into some bit of background and feedback to the portfolio committee, and we will then speak a bit about our performance against the SLA and our financial performance, and also highlight some of the major skills development initiatives that we're implementing as a CETA in response to broad government objectives, and then also speak about our response to the training layoff scheme. In terms of the vision, our vision is clearly to have skills for sustainable growth, development and equity in the transport sector, and our mission is to facilitate that through a framework of planning, through a delivery system within the whole transport sector. We are driven by a value that seeks to have best quality service and maximize value for all stakeholders within the transport sector. Now, in terms of how we structured, we have quite a number of what we call chambers. Some people could call those subsectors. The whole of transport has got 8 subsectors. We've got the maritime chamber that deals with transportation by sea. We've got road passenger that exclusively deals with the transportation of people by buses. And then we've got road freight, which is the movement of goods using trucks. And then we've got the specific subsector for the taxi industry. And then we've got rail, for movement by train, aerospace, aviation. Freight handling deals a lot with warehouses and ports and harbors. And forwarding and clearing deals with the supply chain and logistics of movement of goods using either all forms of transport. So those are the eight subsectors that we've got in the transport sector. And most of them clearly have to promote education, training, and development in the transport sector. Now, unlike other people, we are almost like the SACITA in that we are not directly represented in all provinces. We have two forms of representation. We have direct representation in Gauteng, in Durban, and in Cape Town. But then, to overcome the issue of how to reach our stakeholders and our beneficiaries, we have what we call indirect representation in the remaining six other provinces. How do we sustain this indirect representation? We make use of our stakeholder infrastructure. For example, the Department of Labor. We participate in the Provincial Skills Development Forum. We also participate and work closely with the Department of Transport, but we also participate a lot in all the other provinces in the Provincial Growth Development Strategy Forums, as well as the District Growth Development Strategy. Then what we also do, we also have skills development structures in many other provinces. So we work with both government, work closely a lot with the Department of Transport and the Department of Labor. And in this way, we have allocated senior managers that go and represent TITA in all these other provinces where we do not have direct representation as in the form of officers. But clearly, this is a way in which, for this time during the NSPS2, we are seeking to maximize our reach in all the provinces. Now, in terms of our mandate, I felt it was prudent for us to really speak about our mandate in response to the National Skills Development Strategy, and I'm sure the members of the Portfolio Committee have really heard a lot about the CETA mandate. We just felt it was important to say, how are we responding to the mandate that has been set for us in terms of the National Skills Development Strategy? The most critical mandate that we do is to develop and implement the sector skills plan, which identifies critical and scarce skills within the transport sector as a whole. And we also facilitate high quality medication and training delivery in the workplace. We facilitate that education, training, and delivery in the workplace by approving workplace skills plan every year in June, and also looking at the annual training plans. And then we are therefore able to disperse levies if the companies do qualify in terms of the criteria set by the Department of Labor and both by the TITA board. But then we then also go a step further and give discretionary grants in the transport sector to those that qualify in terms of the discretionary grant criteria that is generally set by the TITA board. Now, one of the most important things that we need to do, we clearly do contract management. And for us to be able to know that we are actually benefiting the sector, we monitor the education and the training activities that are undertaken within the sector. So if a company gets a discretionary grant and a mandatory grant, we've got professionals that are appointed, and their job is to make sure that they go to a company, they do site visits, they check that indeed there is training taking place. When we do disperse grants, we've got certain obligations that are quite onerous that we set on companies to prove that indeed training has taken place. And one of the ways in which we then confirm for ourselves, we also then have moderators that will go and write a moderator's report for us just before the contract is paid out, just to make sure that indeed training has taken place. So we then do a lot of monitoring using our staff, and in some instances we utilize providers that have been appointed specifically for that purpose, just for some level of independence. We then assure quality. We are also accredited by SAFA to be an ETQA within the transport sector. We also then participate a lot in qualification, registration, qualification development, and the generations of unit standards and the generations of qualifications within the transport sector. Now, we don't do all of these things in isolation. We also benchmark against international standards. In fact, one of our qualifications we've done in consultation with a university in Belgium, and it has been quite of benefit to the logistic sector. Now, flowing from our mandate, we then have strategic objectives that we set for ourselves, which is clearly every year to prioritize and communicate the scarce skills within the transport sector, which then would enable the country to have sustainable growth, development, and equity. And we've got specific programs of how we do that. We also promote and accelerate quality training for all in the workplace. We also seek over and above quality training to promote the employability of people, because training people is one thing, but making sure that they get employed is another thing. So we then promote employability by giving people who have been trained access to workplace experience, so that then at least they can get experience and be able to get sustainable livelihoods. We also clearly promote sustainable livelihoods through entrepreneurship development and creation of new ventures. We don't necessarily give the new ventures capital to set up the company, but we give them skills, which is a solid base upon which they can be able to have their own companies set up. We also assist designated groupings in line with the National Skills Development Strategy to assist for them to be able to participate in accredited work, integrated learning, and all sorts of programs for them to be able to enter the labor market. And the most important thing, the underlying strategic objective for all of our programs, is to ensure that the quality of the programs is without doubt, and then there is relevance of provision. Now, a bit of background is that during the year 2006 and 2007, the organization went through a turbulent time, which had challenges that impacted on corporate governance and performance during that year. There was an investment of $200 million that was made by CETA, and this resulted after investigations had been undertaken and forensic investigations and also sort of things had been done, there was disciplinary action against the CEO and the CFO. The ultimate consequence of that investment was that it had a dip in the performance of the CETA in terms of the SLA targets. But the dip was not that bad, in that out of a five rate, the average was 2.5. Now, there were negative perceptions throughout about the viability of the organization as to whether having made such an investment, would the organization be a going concern, or should the organization be placed under administration in terms of the skills development legislation. But after the organization had put in place a performance plan, a performance improvement plan, and assured the Department of Labor and the NSA that it was a going concern, and having met all its financial obligations, CETA was not placed under administration during 2006 and 2007, which we think is something that needs to be noted. Now, having come from such background, where are we standing at present as an organization? What lessons did we learn out of such an investment decision? The organization has reflected, it has reviewed its strategy, and it has reviewed its policies. During the year under question, the organization had a qualification, unfortunately, but the organization, having reflected and reviewed its strategy and having improved its policies, the years that followed, the subsequent years being 07, 08, and 08, 09, the organization has come out with an unqualified audit report from the Auditor General. But because of an investment decision that was made, the organization aligned its investment policy in line with the PFMA and the Treasury regulations, and all investments that are being made in line with the PFMA and the Treasury approval. We have improved our internal controls, and we've focused a lot on corporate governance. The staff and the board regularly go for training in corporate governance. We've also streamlined business processes that we felt could have resulted in some mistakes in the past, and I'm proud to say that the organization is now on a good footing. Now, some of the outcomes and the impact that has resulted as a result of going back and reflecting on decisions that were made previously was that we obviously had to find a way to confirm to our stakeholders that we are a going concern and that we are an organization that has learned from its mistakes and that we are not retracting and afraid to face the public. So we had to work closely with our stakeholders in order to improve their confidence in the organization as a whole. So we worked a lot on relationship management, and we felt the best way to communicate with people was to clearly improve our website. If anybody in South Africa goes onto our website, that website is clearly improved, it has got regular updates, and we've sought to be transparent as far as we can. We've realigned the business strategy, and our performance, I'm pleased to say, has improved significantly, particularly in this previous year. And our stakeholders have shown confidence in us. We had an application that we needed to make in March for recertification, and we were given an overwhelming support from the stakeholders that they believe that CETA has a role to play in the transport sector, and it should be given an opportunity to continue in the next 5 years when the licenses are renewed. Now, in terms of performance, I'm not really going to run through all of the statistics and the number crunching, except just to show the committee what we have done annually from 2005 to date. In terms of communicating our scarce and critical skills, from 2005 to date, we have reached a number of 1,360 skills development facilitators. But over and above that, we've also reached a number of schools by having career exhibitions and informing the learners in the schools about what is available for them within the transport sector. We also support a number of firms in terms of the National Skills Development Strategy. We have, from 2005 to date, supported a total of 730 large firms in the transport sector. The medium firms that we have supported are about 498 from 2005 to date. In terms of small, medium, micro enterprises, for those that are levy paying, we have supported about 1,432. Now for black economic empowerment, we've supported 442 black economic empowerment groupings, be it BEE co-ops and be it companies that are up and coming. This slide is very important to me in that adult basic education remains a challenge in South Africa. We just wanted to show the number of people that have been supported through adult basic education and training. However, we need to indicate that this is a challenge. The target that generally gets set by the Department of Labor is not always achievable given a number of variables. Now, in terms of the indicator that most CETAs really do perform or overperform, if one looks at the numbers, we have been able to support 63,740 workers in various learning programs, either in the form of bursaries, internships, apprentices, skills programs, and learnerships. And the number is quite high. In terms of non-levy paying entities, NGOs and CBOs and so forth, we have supported 349. For unemployed people, we have supported 1,400 and in fact it's 8,212. Workplace experience, the most critical one for us. People do get training, they need to get access to workplace experience. From 2005, we've supported 1,797 learners. new venture creation, generally for those that are from 35 below, we've supported 274 young people. And one of the most important things that we do with this kind of program is to mentor them 12 months after they have started the program to be able to still be sustainable. Now, what are the performance highlights for TITA? We have seen an increase in the submission of WSPs by firms. From for large firms, we have seen a 25% increase, and for medium firms, it is 30%. Why is it significant to us? It is significant to us given the fact that it just demonstrates the confidence that the stakeholders had in this institution following this difficult path. We've also supported institutes of sectoral and occupational excellence, a total of 4. This year we intend to support the 5th one. This is where we work closely with the Department of Transport to make sure that we've got centers of excellence in a specific industry. There is one for aviation, there is one for rail, there is one being set for public transport, and there's another one being set for maritime, and we also have want to have one that deals with logistics and logistical support. Now, the Department of Transport has what they call centers of development that we then support by just making sure that if a learner or anyone wanted to really get into a career within a specific sector, they would go to the centers of excellence and be able to get training and be able to enroll for a program and get best practice there. We have seen an increase in the support that we have given to new ventures of about 114 in the previous year, and we have seen an increase in supporting non-levy paying enterprises of about 640. Now, given the fact that we are not directly represented in all provinces, we have seen an improved performance score of provincial support from 3 to 4. This was the validation that was done by the Department of Labor, which we feel is significant. Our funds management has improved from 3 to 4, and like I said, we have received an unqualified audit opinion for 2 consecutive years, for the year 07-08 and the year 08-09. And prior to 06-07, TITA had always received unqualified audit opinion. For this year 08-09, as reflected in our report, the Auditor General has clearly identified that we do not have matters of emphasis, whereas in the 07-08, we had an unqualified audit which had a few matters of emphasis, and we have been able to clean and deal with those weeds in the garden, if one may put it that way. Our board has scored highly in terms of corporate governance. We have always received a score of 5. Now, in terms of our finances, our total revenue for the year 08-09 was 358 million, and our expenditure was 262 million. What we wanted to do with the table below was just to demonstrate our expenditure as a percentage of the revenue and also do a comparison of the previous year. The most important thing to note is that we were within our 10%, and our mandatory grant expenditure had significantly improved in the previous in the year 08 and 09. And as I had said, we had received an unqualified audit report from the Auditor General. Now, when the Auditor General finished auditing this year, as of the 31st of March, when they looked at our books, it suggested that we were overcommitted as of that date. But as of August 09, we have been able to turn around that negative cash flow that existed as at year end. We have actually set aside 11.8 million for the training layoff scheme. We have committed all of our funds that are available for discretionary grants, and all of we do not have money sitting in the bank that is not committed to any program. Now, how do we work in terms of our other broad government objectives over and above the NSDS? I just felt it was important for us to highlight that we work with government closely. We have supported many SMEs in the bus industry, particularly those that are transporting school learners. They call it scholar transport. There were 321 learners that we trained, and this would be bus drivers that were transporting school learners in the school bus project throughout the whole country. In Gauteng it was 56, Free State 80, and so forth, and so forth. The steps are just on the table for everybody to see. In terms of the taxi industry, we've also focused a lot on the taxi industry, which is a very important aspect to note, given the fact that the taxi industry does not pay levies that much. A sector of the taxi industry that pays levies is the metered taxis. Now, TITA has always sought to support the taxi industry because we take it, this is an industry that we hold dear to our heart. Over the year 2005-06, we trained a total of 3,048 taxi drivers. And the year 2006-07, we trained a total of 880. The year 2008-09, which is the current year, we currently are in a program that we are implementing with the Department of Transport, which is meant to respond to the BRT. What they're trying to do is to take taxi drivers from a code 8 to a code 12 and a code 14 for them to be able to drive these buses in provinces where the BRT is going to be implemented. And what we're doing as a CETA is to provide them with a driving professional program. And this program has been solely funded by the Department of Transport. They've given us about $6 million for this project. In order to respond to other broad objectives of government, we're working closely with the Department of Transport, like I said, for that $6 million taxi project. But we also have contributed significantly to the Gautrain. When the Gautrain was being built, it became clear that South African train drivers could not drive the trains that are coming through. Now, there was a train driver that was brought from overseas at a cost, and we had to make, it was our responsibility to make sure that we make the training program available and accredit the training program so that the drivers in South Africa could be able to drive the Gautrain in anticipation for its launch next year. So we're working closely with Mbombela and in order to make sure that there are adequate trained drivers for that program of government. In terms of 2010, we're contributing through the training program that we have set aside for professional driving. And the program focuses on making sure that they've got customer care, they're able to deal with many languages that people might be coming through when they come to South Africa next year in June. And we have participated closely with the Department of Transport. In actual fact, we sit on the 2010 committee at the Department of Transport. So we provide the learning program, we've got a learning program, we've got enough accredited providers that are going to roll out the program. And the program is going to be rolled out by PRASA, which is one of our constituencies that sit on our structures. But over and above that, in response to government's priority of making sure that we reduce unemployment, we've collaborated with the CEDA, SARS and CIPRO, just to make sure that people have access to skills if they want to open up a new company. We've also worked closely in response to youth and women issues with the Department of Transport. They've set up what they call a South African network of women in transport. They also have a South African network of youth in transport, and we've worked closely with those agencies to make sure that people have got exposure to ventures and opportunities within transport as well as skills development. We're also working closely currently with the South African Bus Organization for drivers on bus driver skills program. We've got a professional driving program that we implement with them. Over and above the ones that are listed here, we work with all agencies that come to us for any assistance in terms of training. Now, for the layoff scheme, we're also contributing in the layoff scheme. I must say we have not yet received any application from any company within our sector that is distressed. But in anticipation of that, we have set aside that 1.8 million to support, in fact it's 11.8 million to support the scheme, and we will get more funding from NSF depending on the uptake. We've already redeployed a dedicated project manager to this project because we take it the amount of administrative burden that will be within a CETA for making sure that the companies will get paid, that the money is dispersed, is going to require that there must be somebody specially dedicated for it. So we're responding to the training layoff scheme. We participate in the training layoff scheme committee that has been set up by the Department of Labor, and we just waiting for companies to approach us, but we are ready to implement the program. And we have just thought to set for ourselves our strategy and approach, and we've just made sure that we stay within the broad criteria that has been set by NEDLAC and all of the partners in the training layoff scheme. Before we even set aside that approximately 12 million, we sought to understand how many companies within our sector are distressed, and such information is kept, people keep it, and we then realized we can't just wait and be found wanting. So we went ahead, set aside money, we've got a team within the CETA that will be able to respond when the need arises, and we're anticipating that if they're going to be participating in a learnership, 3 months is not adequate, and we might obviously have to approach the National Skills Fund for more funding, because learnerships within the transport sector do not last for 3 months. And depending on what the uptake is, and depending on what the sector is that requires support, we will then be able to respond accordingly. But the good thing is, because we've got a sector skills plan that identifies the critical and scarce skills within a specific sector, we will be able to respond accordingly. So as it is now, CETA is able to respond to the training layoff scheme when the need arises. So in a nutshell, we just felt we will just respond to what broadly in government what programs we are implementing in, and what is our response to the training layoff scheme. Spoke a bit about our performance, our financial performance, and just what we have done since CETA appeared before the Portfolio Committee in 2006. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Sowell. We have come to an end of the report by the Chairperson. Now, I'm going to give an opportunity to Mr. Azara. I'm going to ask you, that you must ask three important questions. We are not going to allow you to ask 10. Let's take 3 to 3, and then we can go transfer out. The most important 3 questions for the best of you. I don't know if you can afford the order for us. Oh, okay. Another problem. Yes, the speakers must listen very carefully, because the questions will be asked for all of you. There is questions that will be required to answer all of you, that will be directed to all the speakers. So please listen carefully to the questions. Over to you, Honorable Member.
Thank you for your presentation to all the teachers. I am a new member of the committee, so I am learning quite a lot, and I must say the presentations are really good. There are many feelings of what is being done with teachers on the ground. If I could explain here what teachers all about, it would be difficult for me to explain. Just to give an example, transport teachers. You were saying that you understand the the burden can protect the policy changes. But when I protect the industry, I see that when it makes the money, you know, they don't educate. People are not talking about educate. And many of them are dropped out of the school, not completed their schooling. So what do you do with regards to training the drivers on the street, you know, and so forth? But yeah, that is, young people who don't think they have skills on education, they don't do regular passengers and so forth. How does that guy who rides in the road right here in Cape Town, for example, know about your teacher and the services that you are offering? So I just think that people, you know, on the ground are probably of the teachers and the services that you are offering. Basically, also to the transport teacher, I also have a problem, I have a chair and organization for deaf people. And for years we've been trying to get people, trying to find employment for deaf people. For example, we have social security workers, okay? And we have some deaf people who are provincial directors, but they don't have the qualifications, and many of them don't have the driver's license. Many of them. Deaf schools used to have driving classes for deaf learners. By the teachers themselves use that because they can record themselves driving around the car park in the deaf schools and other times, so they help program on the stop. So how can you assist that? Say deaf people who are facing jobs but of course they need licenses, how should they provide an assistance in something like that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Another member, Rahul Ali. I have the same two questions for the transport teacher and the security teacher. It seems that the teachers are telling us that so far nobody's applied for the program, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that 3 months training is too short to put somebody to a leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing it needs to tell us is that you set aside money.
Mm-hmm.
So no one's applied yet, 3 months training is too short, but you are setting aside money. That's the first question. Is that correct? Second question is, can you describe to me the typical person that will lose their job that you think you can retrain and send somewhere else? Just give me an example. Those are the two questions for those two. For the public service teacher, in your case, this company is now going to retrain people. You've got a situation where it's government departments that you're dealing with. There are posts that are frozen in municipalities, in provincial governments, and in national governments because of the budget constraints. Many government departments have frozen their posts. Should we not be focusing on just filling those posts instead of trying to find the people that will be there to change? Can't we just fill those posts because then it's saving people when they change the chip?
My first question also goes to the teacher. What is the figure of those who completed the training? Since 2005, 63,740 workers participated in the different training areas. We also need to know the figure of completion. How many of them completed? That's the first one. And the second question is, the fatality rate in the logistical industry, the transport industry, in particular train riding mechanism, that has increased over the years.
Mm.
I come from the background, that is why I understand that the background very well.
Mm.
My question to you, how are you doing? A couple of years ago, I first want to make a statement and then I'll ask a question. A couple of years ago, a person who wanted to be a train driver the time frame was a little bit between 5 years to 10 years. Because there is a very it's a very sensitive and a very expensive locomotive that you drive. But nowadays people just run through over 3 to 6 months, that is going to be over. And as a result, many fatalities have occurred, locomotives are being destroyed in the process, which cost millions, if not billions of lives. What exactly is it that your department is doing in order to address this?
If I get another chance, I'll ask
you. Thank you.
In my opinion, Chair, what happens at the police station on the service of yes, what happens to the police station employees and when people are not treated properly or in a situation where police, engage in the use of violence instead of being professional, or in the jail where the water feels and use what they used to get before the youth before 1994. Said to me that the FISA has not come properly, has not done enough to ensure that there is education. Can they say what is it that they're to be able to do with that? So, I'm concerned with the security of the country. And the reality is, like the minister, Malvina said, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago, he complained about this thing of the private security. I'm referring to this because they indicate that as part of the composition of the force, they deal with their private security. He indicated that there are more armaments in the hands of the private security than in the hands of the government itself. And that is why at any time there can be a coup in this country. What do we do? What does the system start with? This and this to be there. And on top of that, the issue of the crime that is there in the country. Should I then say that the system is partly part of the whole program because of they are not coming forward to say that indeed this is what is happening. I'm referring to this because they are saying that they are there dealing with the last. For now, you have 9 questions to get before for them. Recently, there was supposed to be, or there was, of course, the free licensing of the people who have firearms, licensed firearms. And what the police station did was to say that these people must go to a private institution where they were trained in firearms and training, etc., so that they could come back and get the license. Now, what is the CISA doing, or what has it done to make sure that there is, working together with the government, with the security institution, to ensure that people are trained? Because in my opinion, by going there in the private institution, people could be corrupt, people could buy the certificate and come back and get the license. That should be the problem. We'll come back there.
They are some of them
I'm following my notification friends. How you say this, officer? But what do you do with them when they come for better training to you? Those people are particular, they have always been here. But another one is that, do you train the members of the CTF? Because I think a lot of people need a much more training members of the CTF. In your decline, you need the all over the country. And the other one is that the lady there said something about the FETs and the with FETs, how do you offer training to ex students from FETs, or you wait for them to come to you? So you make it offer to students, especially colleagues. Because I'm asking this question very close to my heart. I'm very close to a new FET college in Germany. It's going to be open very soon. So I want to know how are they going to benefit from FET, and also too about training open the military veterans. You train individuals or you train the association of military. And does that include the non-central organization, the previous veteran association
and also the focus of
statement that given the weight to such a decision. But while I was wondering as to for how long, and other states have said the same, are we going to see a realistic attack? Not stating as to how many there, because once people are appearing to the facilities, it gives us less information in terms of speakers. We will always be concentrating on facilities, but it doesn't give us exactly how many they are.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Really good or bad presentation. I'm doing too fast because the safety of the community and the figures that have a top training line part. That target was 10,000, a couple hundred that achieved 15,000. And the public sector, education and training authority, through the layoff training, they intended to approach other sectors where there are problems with a view of assessing. I think that's important. The transport sector has much other sectors do not have any monitoring mechanism after receiving work-based skills plan and report in relation to that. My three questions, Madam Chair, is to Sapita. How do they assist what I had in that presentation, that in a way that involved in placement of people who have been trained. How do you do that? I think the important was for you to share that with us and even other speakers. I'm referring to the unemployed. When you say the unemployed, because you don't have to place those who are already employed. Because employers develop their workplace plan on the basis of the employees that they have at a particular time. So how do you assist in the client assessment of the unemployed who have been trained? To all sisters, whatever I didn't have anything that relates to cooperatives from public sector sisters, but service security and transport sisters, you do what other sisters do. When they are referring to small, medium, macro enterprises, they will say strong cooperatives or say an cooperative. I ask my view to be specific, which cooperatives are referring to? What are they doing those cooperatives? The last one, to all citizens, to what extent labor program involved in skills development. I'm asking this. You can hear a labor program saying to what extent are they involved in training and education? I'm asking this because your establishment is in terms of the skills development, that's a presentation that was made by labor brokers when we had public hearings on the 25th and 26th. Saying that they are involved in the killing and integration of the nation. Killing and integration involved in skills development. So I want to ask this question. That's why the labor program is not saying, in each and every presentation, I ask this question. Thank you very much.
I don't want to accuse more of that people of court names, that names that they are not. I didn't know that there are labor brokers up here inside the room, but I'm sure you know.
There are two questions that I have shared, but one is that I just want to go general with regards to the challenges that ordinary people will face when they approach the council. And especially the people that deal with the public sector. One of the most problems that we come across is coming to the government saving to the public. The young man now is a big leader, suicide, because he's not yet living. And there may be a number of cases, police issues where police will not be able to respond because they challenge a complaint. Now, that is the challenge that we're facing at the early times of how we provide that kind of humane saving to the general public. And the question I want to ask you is, we are all there. Critical, structure that sort of deals with questions of empowering, our people in the front line to be able to provide that service without, a bribe or anything. But what is it that we're doing? What is it to make them follow what government has put in place for the problem of the issue, which I think is one of the most key areas for us. Everybody has to be able to say, a partner to be able to support and provide the service. Because part of what we find, you raise the issue of a population system and paradigm. Because if you look at the cost, sometimes it's not what local government is failing to provide. There's a lot that we have done in the country when it comes to roads, housing, water, electricity. But the problem we have is the manner in which government interacts. The frontline officers at the frontline are unable to either respond to a theory or to a problem that has been put before them as far as the government. Because these are some of the challenges. I represent a constituency which is 100% rural. In that sense, for the past 15 years, we've managed to do what I expected to do. Was the mega problem of the population. But you find that services have been provided, but the manner in which government sort of communicate to people in terms of development. And I thought that maybe the leaders can be able, to respond to that particular gap and look at ways and means of how to sort of make sure that we capacitate, our a public servant to be able to relate in a particular way to a master of law. That thing that will contribute to harmonize, you know, the work of government and the relationship between government and the issue of layoff. I understand that the manner in which you presented in this register, but you are not affected much by the layoff. Therefore, but you have committed to everyone, whatever that comes. The question I want to understand is, you know, the, one of the real problems that we have is the coordination of the layoffs from all of them. Not only the services, but all of them. Each teacher focuses on his own area, and the other teacher will just, you know, for the sake of allocation, but in case the layoff, therefore, we choose this one. I don't see a comprehensive response from all of them. I mean, this is not my. That says that here is the most depressed sector, which is mining, for example. All of our bodies is that we can do to make sure that, and if we're going to combine these resources, all of us, I think we can be able to respond positively to the challenges that the ordinary mining workers are facing. In Washington, they have been speaking now, it's one of the workers in one of the mines. They've been closed down because the mine is not producing. All the 200 workers are now in the street. And the 2,000 children who are there, they don't have that much capacity to take the support to that challenge. And that is true from the community. I mean, the type of thing. So, it's called the people. So, therefore, what I'm trying to say is that if there's more coordination, therefore, the call that I'm making here is that maybe at some point, it may not be now, maybe at some point by virtual, we need to convene, you know, at the top level, maybe all the stuff. Just look at, you know, this is the church area, especially your mining. Agriculture has been, I mean, for a long time. The growth of the people that work in that sector. They are now moved. If you look at the right, the number of water camps that have dealt much wound in all the small towns next to the, you know, where they are farming communities. You will see that the majority of the people have now moved from the farms to the counties. That is why the remnants of a lot of what I can do is just developed now. And again, the problems across the border of migration, which has been had quite very negative on how to make people to respond to the challenges. That is why we have the general problem of saving people in the water. But I think this is the battle for the business check, of making sure that there is more coordination of the challenge to be able to respond. So it's quite very much in general that I would say. On the public safety system, what the last point here is that. The last point here is that you talk much about the way, you know, the way to do this, the way to do this. I don't have a sense of exactly what impact we are making or what impact we have made. So, particularly at the presentation that talks of the future. You know, this is what we are still going to do. This is how we're going to respond. I don't have a feel of exactly what it is that you have done, man. You make a call for more resources, but you're not specific. That the 21 million rand, you know, whatever that you have received, is not sufficient. But you're not saying how you're going to be raising a more than resource. Or saying Parliament. The Parliament is here to assist you with regular challenges. Parliament help us.
Thank you, I don't know who decides on coverage for the department. So, on the department, they have exceeded the coverage. Big money. Now, there's a lot of people who said that they're going to be on the money. Now, who decides and what criteria to decide on this target if this target has to be achievable? Because it's not following the other entities.
Now, also, the security the security industry is dominated by white people. Your agency, those that established the security industry, your charge, the name, the Danaka. What is the system that you are in? And what impact has this made to the black security industry that are calling? With security industry that are black, that you have assisted from the black up to now, what impact have we had nationally in terms of services like the child and the agencies and others? There are a number of private security industries. Others are involved in public administration. What is this? How they get to you? This training that you are offering to, if I had to correct the staff, when you are practicing staff, I'm sure the question that I have, I will only ask you after I receive questions with the answer. That's the question. And where are these people that are going? Are they going to these different companies, or are they going to staff, or going to SMES, or are they going to other?
Transport Peter will address Transport Peter questions. I think the first question was with regards to what is being done for the person on the ground, especially in the taxi industry. Do we teach this school dropouts and young people etiquette, because most of them do not have etiquette? Our driving, professional driving program has a component that deals with etiquette, and that component deals with customer services. Now, we will all agree that the needs are greater than the budget permits, but where we are able to train through our driving professional program, the main component of that program is to teach people etiquette and make sure that they are able to know how to deal with the client and how to interface with the client. And the figures that I've just shown is just a dip in the ocean of what TITA has done throughout the country in order to respond to professional driving problems in the taxi industry. Now, there was a second question related to that, which was related to the Cape Town, that said, how do we ensure that the people on the ground know about TITA? How do we ensure that people know about the services that we offer? We use a variety of platforms for that purpose. Number one, we advertise in the media and have what we call stakeholder roadshows and forums. Now, we advertise as far as possible using many newspapers. Where it is possible, where funds permit, we use radio. Where it is possible, we then prefer face-to-face support to people. Over and above that, we do really use the website for those that can connect with the internet for them to know the services that we offer. We have what we call in transport system, general education and training practitioners. These are people that are like our ambassadors. There's one in Cape Town and there's one in Durban. And what they do, they go as far as possible, having road shows, attending meetings, and just spreading the message about the services that Transport CETA does. And at the schools as well. One of the most important things that we believe we can reach is for us to be able to get the products that are able to, the learners that are ready and able to be trained for them to access workplace experience. So what we do, we have learner road shows, and we try and reach as many grade 10, grade 11, and grade 12 learners so that they might know what programs to go for, what learnerships are available, and what bursaries are available. There is another question relating to the training, a driving program, a driver training program for deaf people in the workplace who have qualifications but do not have driver licenses. How can we assist to train deaf people, and not only the deaf people, but people everywhere placed in jobs for them to get driver licenses? Our program for professional driving has got a component where we enable the drivers to be trained on defensive driving as well as practical driving. But once we've done the training, we've got to work closely with the licensing authorities in a specific province for them to be able to get their licenses. But our driving program has got quite a number of unit standards, and one of the standards is for them to be able to get driving licenses. I know that the Department of Transport and Education, as part of their curriculum, they were really thinking about whether they should run a full program on driver training for those that are doing grade 11 and grade 12, so that when they finish school, at least they've got a driver license. Now, that is a program that if the Department of Transport and Education would approach us as a CETA to participate in, we would be able to participate, because we have a program in place for that. Yes. Now, one of the things that the NSDS does, we don't discriminate on the basis of whether people are disabled or whatever. There is a specific target set for the country that we must train about 4% of disabled people, 54 women, and 85% African people. So we do not really. If people do approach us for a driving program, where funds permit, they are able to access driving programs. There was a general question, I think, that was addressed to all the CETAs, but no one, most of us have said no one has yet applied. The 3-month training is too short. Money has been placed aside, however. And you wanted us to give you examples of people who could be trained. Now, this would be really pure speculation at this stage, because we don't clearly have the figures as to how many people are affected, but we know from practice that, for an example, the driving program that I've spoken about takes about 12 months, because they've got to go to practical, they've got to train, and they've got to go to the class. Now, if we were to be approached, which we know we will be approached, to undertake a training program, we clearly know that it will not be for 3 months. And if I was to say, what kind of a person could we train? We could train a person that cannot read and write, in order for them to be able to understand and get basic life skills. That program could be shorter, and that program can enable the person maybe to be placed somewhere, depending on what their needs are. So I'm just speculating, because I don't know what kind of a worker out there would be distressed. What I know is that a worker that cannot read and write, that doesn't have skills, is more vulnerable than a worker that has got specific skills. Now, a truck driver could lose a job, or let me say a taxi driver could lose a job. They could upgrade their license and go and get a truck driver license for them to be able to work within the trucking industry. I'm just thinking, in other sectors like aviation, it would be extremely difficult to train somebody within a very technical environment for them to be able to get a skill, for them to be able to be placed in the critical areas where the greater skill lies. For an example, pilots. There's no way that we will be able to train pilots with the amount of money that is at our disposal and be able to train them within 3 months, which is why we're saying the concept is good, the idea is good, but it is based on a number of assumptions. And until those assumptions are tested, and until you've got an agreement on the table, you are then able to know what are you dealing with and what kind of programs can you put together. And I think it links to the question by the Honorable Chauke, who said, we are all putting money aside, and what are we going to do? Is it not better for us to coordinate our efforts better? And I think in response to that, I would say the CETAs have set up the 30th of September to the 1st of October to have an inter-CETA summit. What we're trying to do in that summit is to try and grapple with the issues that we are facing in the CETA industry. And I would think, given the fact that most of us have already identified the funding for this training layoff scheme, maybe we can use some of the commissions that are going to be placed at that inter-CETA summit and use the collective people that are there to think about what we can do and specify the industries that we can help and see where we can get more funding and what time duration that we're talking about, so that when we respond with a coherent, coordinated strategy as opposed to currently respond on your own, as opposed to what the country as a whole is facing. And I think the Inter-CETA Summit is one good basis where we can start this process of coordinating, which will achieve an economies of scale for us. There's a question that deals with the numbers of people that completed our training program. You said it's 63,000 that entered, you wanted the numbers. I can give you without doubt the numbers from the annual report for this previous year, which is 08-09. 15,212 people completed their learning programs. Now, to give you far back, going to 2005 would require that we just go and grab the stats and be able to provide them at the later appearance at the committee. You spoke about a very critical area of fatality rates in the train industry. We work closely with the rail safety regulator. The rail safety regulator has got the needs that they've identified. When this train accidents do happen, they've been able to identify some gaps in the training. They've been able to identify what the greatest need is. Now, what they've done, we're working closely with them, we've set up a memorandum of understanding, and what we've got to do was to make sure that our training program that we do develop, because one of our mandates is to do qualifications, was to make sure that the qualifications that are developed for train drivers do not compromise standards and they don't compromise safety. But it is informed by the steps that are gathered by the inspectors from the rail safety regulator, so that we come up with a program that is customized to suit the country. We have just started the first process of just identifying the unit standards, what safety areas we have identified to be a problem. One of the most critical things we've identified is the long hours, I think, that they work has had an impact on the accidents that eventually tend to happen. Now, we've identified that for this program to run, we've got to come up with a curriculum, but we also have to get, because train driving is very technical and it's very practical, they need to have instructors that can then be able to confirm that they are competent to drive the trains, that they won't be vulnerable to accidents. So the reason why we're working with rail safety regulator is for us not to have a program in isolation of what the current realities are for the train sector, and we're working closely with the rail safety regulator in that regard. The program is still on the go. We haven't yet finalized it, but we're still working to identify the specific components. Now, the people that sit on the team that we set together come from the rail safety regulator, the inspectorate, but we also have people coming from CETA that have got expertise in how to come up with a learning program. We also have community of experts who have expertise in the train industry. I wouldn't want to.
Simply for the sake of time, I will ask the board or the members follow up questions based on that particular thing that you're speaking about
okay.
right now.
Okay.
That's for the sake of time, I will.
Okay. I'm trying to quickly look at all the questions because some questions were for some. There is a question about FET. How do we support them? Do we wait for them? And how do we approach them? We currently get applications that get submitted to us when the discretionary grant period is opened. And these applications would come from the stakeholders who would then identify a potential training provider. Now, in the case of KZN, for an example, we're working in collaboration with the KZN FET, one FET college in KZN to support those that are like in the mechanical maintenance management, because we've realized that maintenance management is a problem. So we don't necessarily always approach, but we wait for applications to come and we identify a need that might be identified by the specific province. And the way in which we support them is just to enable the learners to get workplace experience. There was a question about women drivers. I wish I had the stats. I do not have the stats, but we do have women drivers, especially for the program that we're currently running with the Department of Transport in provinces for the taxi. If we had the stats, had we thought that we would be posed this question, but we would not have a problem availing the stats at a later stage. But we do have female drivers, bus drivers, as well as female taxi drivers. Placement? There was a general question about placement. I would wish to give other speakers an opportunity to answer it. Because I think otherwise it would end up because I started that I answer all the questions. To what extent do we have labor brokers? I am not aware of any involvement of labor brokers in the transport sector. I'm not really, really sure. I would be speaking under correction. Challenges by Honorable Chauke, I think I'll leave it to staff teacher and peace teacher. The target question that was posed by the Honorable Chair, that why do we exceed the targets? Who decides the targets? Are we exceeding them because they are too low, or what is the problem? I personally do not believe in number crunching. I believe in impact. And I believe the current National Skills Development Strategy has been set up in a consultative way by constituency bodies. The constituencies are employers, employees, community people, as well as department officials and everybody involved in the skills development arena. Now, when the targets were set, NSDS 2 in 2005, we don't know what informed those targets, but we assume that they were informed by government priorities. But given the fact that we're chasing the targets and the targets seem to be exceeded quickly, I would believe that the better strategy for the NSDS 3 is to customize what the needs per sector are, as opposed to say transport give us 15,000 AGAT, you give us 20,000, because then we then lose the sight of what we are supposed to do, which is to make sure that our people are trained and they are able to get jobs. So I would believe the number crunching, I don't agree with it, but we do implement, and I don't know whether they were really, really informed by what was on the ground. But I'm hoping that the new strategy will really be informed by the challenges that we've had with the number crunching. If I make this post, my other
colleagues.
On the issue of the impact while we're thinking about things that we still need to do in terms of the training layout. The issue is that the training layout, of course, is still a new thing, and a lot of things that we're waiting on are the plans that we need to do. And in other areas, we're talking about the cooperation that we'll be having with some of the different, of course, some of them will be in the interaction with the partners, identifying them as the partners for us to be able to assist them. So that's what we'll be doing. But for other performance issues, we did indicate that some information is in the event that we'll be available to members. I'll have my colleagues to check on the other sessions and to get some more information on the rest.
Thank you, Tim. And I'm saying, honorable members, thank you. On the question of feeling of hope, can you see that it is advertising to focus on feeling of hope with everything at all, primarily when it's not even linked to lack of skills or competencies? But what we aim to do is to understand whether DPSA as well as OPSC can start with the blockages in terms of the feeling of vacancies. But we cannot just want to as a standalone. We will focus particularly on the gaps as far as skills are concerned and the qualifications. And we're hoping that in terms of the digital work, the development of qualification framework, which is linked to careers within the public sector, will help or will go a long way in assisting to identify various competencies for various designation or for various occupations. The second question is, how do we ensure that people on the ground have access to know about the PCA or the commission related to the PCA? We currently participate on a number of exhibitions that are primarily targeted at schools as well as learning institutions, as well as some social structures. What we do there is to provide information on the careers in the public sector and how people can access such careers in the public sector, as well as the learning opportunities as far as benefits are concerned and skills programs. The question on the MET, how do you offer training for excellence? What's wrong is the fact that a number of government departments have forced things for entities to roll out benefits. And this is happening almost all the provinces. What's noting are all hands in the act, the Free State as well as the Mpumalanga. The Free State, all health care colleges have currently taken through the government benefits through various learning benefit programs across the public sector needs, as well as the Mpumalanga way of using entities to take workers through the network to acquire the necessary qualification. I will then hand over to Zama to do the rest. Thank you.
Madam Chairperson, members, and my colleagues, the question which you want to respond to is about the principal that we partnered with and program for women, youth, and when I'm understanding the international farming and the month, but the PISA has identified the talent in PISA for remaining in electrical companies, construction PISA for EPW program, and LPS PISA for municipalities that are under control. We've identified with the data that we're telling our presentation. And regarding the program for the women, youth, and people with disabilities, PISA developed unit standards for gender mainstreaming, which was identified by the cabinet as one of the priorities of the program. We are also working with the youth development agency, formerly Mutombo, to develop a youth, women, and people with disabilities program, which focuses on cooperating. The agency identified the cooperatives and set them up, and what we do is we come in to assist them to in training and how to manage the cooperatives, and also how can we and also assist them to establish their own entity, particularly around training and development. And what we've done is that we have developed a unit standard on the cooperative management. We've also developed a learning material. The agency is the YDA Youth Development Agency is currently preparing identification of such entities, and as soon as that can, we will bring them to us. The next question was, what is the role in, of the PCs in empowering the frontline service personnel to improve service delivery? It might have not been like that, but I just paraphrased it for my understanding. I hope it will still be the same. What we did is we developed and registered a set of human standards for frontline personnel which focuses on customer service with the underlying principles. And we've also developed a new publication on home affairs civic services, and we are currently assisting the home affairs establishment academy because no other agency can provide such kind of training that is required by home affairs, and we are also assisting the academy to get accreditation. As a key requirement in the project stages, what we emphasize is that in every learning program that is meant for our sector, issues of social transformation such as customer service and women empowerment, there must be underlying principles in any program, irrespective of whether such program is about those areas, but we need to see those social issues coming up in every program whenever we even wait for a program. And on the next question about placement of unemployed learners, the PISA draws its mandate amongst other pieces of policy directives, one of them being the public service human resource development strategy framework. The strategy framework emphasizes the exit strategy for learners or teams through the specialty plan implementation. In short, the department must be willing to absorb learners which they bring in as part of learnership internship or pattern, so that we don't just train people that are going to learn up on the street. Each time the department implements the HRC plan, it must always be willing to absorb them as a training. And so on.
From Fabrice, I think in terms of your question, I think we'll agree with the sentiment expressed by Chita in terms of the approach towards the setting of targets. But then I need to indicate that we need to make a distinction between the role of Fabrice. We are not a regulation. We are deeper focusing in terms of facilitating the delivery of training in the safety and security sector. So those regulations need to, you know, overcome into the terms of safety and security. They were then applied with the respective departments, including the individual company. But I think let me indicate that there is a true that the composition of the private security industry is still white dominated and male dominated. And also need to make a distinction between private security employers that we support in terms of skills and development, and also the private security training providers. So in terms of the national skills development strategy indicator, we have some of the transformational indicators that we have to contribute to. For example, the indicator on the support for black emerging training providers to be assisted in terms of quality assurance, delivery of products and other capacity related programs. So that is as a feature we are doing. Then I think our teacher will talk about the progress in the intelligence community.
But I think it's quite a bit of a question. There's quite a bit of a question on the training in the intelligence community. I think there's a number of questions which are raised relating to the ownership of firearms by the private companies, the volume thereof. I think there is a lot in the response that was given by the CEO in terms of the money of the department in assessing and evaluating the risk associated with issuing a firearm to a our role is the one of accreditation of the training institutions, and one institution has been accredited. They then go and conduct training. For every student, they then submit training reports to us, which on the basis of the training report will then issue the thing. So the question around the risks associated with the approval of firearms is one that is beyond our mandate. And in terms of the accreditation of this training provider, as we've indicated in our presentation that out of the seven chambers, one of the chambers is the policing chamber. So the policing chamber plays a central role in terms of guiding the data on what the standards should be, what the assessment should be, and how it is functioning, the money within the city. With regard to the question around the training in the security services, the various chambers who are set up in our sector, they will assist them to develop their own website, which can then guide their training needs and training, and define training needs and training area. And on the basis of that, they then determine which learnership, which learning programs they need support for. And at the period when they are required to submit annual training reports, that is when then they assess whether we've made progress, they've made progress, or we have not made progress. In terms of the training area of the Chairperson was asking, we assist them in both core business skills, space craft training, as well as the soft skills. The soft skills would relate to issues like report writing, some of the investigators might have challenges with report writing. So, in order to improve the quality of that work, at an analysis stage, you need to make sure that those who are doing investigation are able to put up reports. Also help them with project management. You might find that they are running a number of projects, but some of these project teams lack the project management skills. So we also assist them in that area. We also assist them with the general management skills. And in this area, we largely are using the Palama formally family in terms of focusing on those key managerial areas. In the area of the core skills, if one were to look at our annual report, you will notice that in the intelligence chamber, the depth was specifically, I think, about four qualifications. One national diploma in analysis, another national diploma in surveillance, in operations, and those are really offered by the other. they have their own academy. What the speaker has done is a picture of their academy, with their application and the development of unit standards in the same material.
There was also a question on cooperative examples. We are having many other research that have formed cooperative on agriculture. We have also been having cooperatives that are interested within the project system. These basically are policemen and women who have been in that country and the system because of incapacity. So some of them have been approached to form poverty for purposes of income generation. Then there was a question on community policy for our support. I think it's part of our obligation to support NGOs, to support community-based organization with the intention of strengthening civil society, also dedicated funding for community forum. Then there was a question on coordination. Yes, I think the view that has been expressed by Arab that the need for coordination across the sectors of the economy and the professor to work in a collaborative fashion, you know, to synergistically improve our intervention is quite important. Then let's also respond to the issue of the challenge of saving the climate. As a speaker, we put a huge investment in terms of the frontline service. You know, we're interested in the content that is, you know, intended to make sure that people who want to access information to the society do so with relatively, but also making sure that we work with provincial processes and live at the top of this process. Because if you look at the type of technology, it's exactly similar, that the information must go there to the public. So we have been in our situation within the provincial digital development forum. We have been requesting that we be given the opportunity to work with the employment services practitioners, carry out that of the property by terms of helping us to roll out the information, you know, with the public in terms of the CETA existence. That will also extend to the request made to GSIS to access the social center where we can actually distribute information about the existence of the CETA, including looking at community development. We have to access that to reach those places where the CETA can't reach. There was another question on how do we make sure that we present formal applications entering the industry. Well, here I think we must say that for people who come into the program with the collaboration of the employer, there are regimes, you know, systems put in place to make sure that you actually admit people with the right credentials. There's also been a project that was presented from the security lab that is kind of looking at the role of the private security industry, particularly at the necessities that have to do with the kind of security contract that has a security criminal record. Then, can you see us through how we assist partners to respond to their needs?
Thank you, Jim. I'm going to respond to the question particularly asked on the connection of subspace with the state department, South Defense Correction, And I think also the deputy chair of our board has made it to the channel to attend as well. In terms of their own skills, what has happened that all the five state departments that are members in the Sospita, in Sospita, they all develop their own skills for it, and then they would advance their, they would isolate their skills and physical skills, like any other private entity. They would also submit a diversity that they would have to say to us that for the next 5 years of their strategy, when, like now when the government priorities have changed, we expect them to would have finalized their skills policy and have given us that in terms of the next 5 years, what skills or skills and physical skills do they need? And they articulate that in their WRP. And we stick with them in their chairman's office, they have established their government, they will prioritize their interventions. And we would stick with them to fund those interventions that government would not fund. Like they are healthy health, and then they are unemployed, like the hospitality program, and also assist them, especially in areas like they are really having their genetic set in their core. So we will assist them. And looking again at the question that has been asked on the placement of learners that are employed, which is a success within the staff and correctly. The model that has been followed by staff of employed or of them taking into account now, they would recruit the unemployed, put them in a learnership for 2 years. That is another way of assisting them to get their learners and observe them within the 2 years that they will be having through experience and learning. And in that case, it gives them an opportunity to also decide which learners that they will accredit in the use of firearms. And what happens, because they come, they recruit those learners already with a vacancy, then the majority, almost about 99% of those learners, they meet all the criteria of competent in the learnership, competent in the firearm and the fitness, then they become automatically absorbed. And with corrections, the model now that they will be following also in the learnership, where in all their learners now, they will be recruited into their correction science learnership, also as unemployed, and then be taken through the learnership, and from there, then that they will recruit them and place them to manage for the adult purchase to go away. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With regards to the question that was asked regarding the court management within the justice, we are excited of other than that we want to train, but this is actually for one ended up with the before that actually can be said. But that's not the end of it, because they are for planning to continue with this particular training during this financial year. But maybe let me also take this opportunity to talk a bit on the community policy in forum, because one of the questions that was asked around that one. And let me state that within the policy channel, there are quite a project which has identified which will be focusing more on the training of the community policy in forum. Here, the contract has been signed, and this project will be taking off the policy. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, I think we need to have a process around the amount of questions. I'm not sure if there's anything that is going on to add to the
issue. Okay, I want to make a follow-up question on this.
What I wanted to say is that there has been, you know, the kind of an arrangement that further information was especially on the issue that we saw that it would be very challenging that we could get that information. We have already the risk of the financial year. Therefore, we that for us to have a feel of where that information can be found. On the issue of spread, your presence, I think it's one area that all of you are paying to routine and some problems that are happening. The money is one of the challenges, Chair, but I think we have to check if you have left here, how best to spread your control. and making sure that you don't get the arrangement, the kind more grant. And yes, there's a lot of issues. Therefore, I think the real level, I think, we should look at financial aid. For us to be able to make it for the rural market in general, because the ones who are really generous.
No, just one question. The accreditation for trainers. Who are the trainers? Is it the production? Is it the who are the trainers? Is it like in all other hospitals where when people come they like us to come? So if everything is right for the paper, all these requirements in terms of whether it's trained, national academic or certification in other things, that's all what happens here. So can I, for instance, if I have the right credentials and come and apply, and you give me the job training people? You must understand. I really want to. I don't understand. Mm. So you will help me to understand how does this training, who does this training. The people run the mass company that you that have been vetted by this the security institution yourself, so saying yes and then others, or anybody who can do training, just think. For instance, a former SAPF member who has all the credentials, or a former MTA member who has credentials, how does it happen?
In our center, we have got two types of health providers. We have got a private only provider. Those are providers that are tied to OSHA, who go through our accreditation system, also meet the criteria for them to be declared accredited. So they'll be accredited in the Southeast and primary focus and qualification. Then we also have public providers. In our case, public providers in the police will be the police college nationally. That we also do quality assurance, we accredit in terms of the various levels of accreditation. The same applies to the Department of Corrections, therefore correctional quality throughout the country. So a majority of the safety and security training providers will basically quality or accredit them in the state of security primary and focus area.
Do you make follow up for those private companies that you have accredited? Do you monitor the training? Do you know what are they being trained for? And where do they end up? Do you do that?
Yes, we have a system of monitoring and evaluation that we conduct in a two-pronged approach. The first approach that for every project that has been conducted, we have verifiers that would go to that special training, verify the content of the outcomes, and also check the statement level of the data. And in the report of the verifier, we also look for instances of non-compliance. If, for instance, a provider not compliant in terms of accreditation regulation, will then the data withdraw that particular accreditation data entrance, reclassify that particular provider, and to ensure that they're compliant.
Thank you, Dr. Thank you.
You know what I want to know, Mr. Bejane, when you come back as a department to give the annual report, is to tell us, I'm more interested on the data to know, is it possible that we might say people who might be used for something else? For instance, 2 years or 3 years ago, there were people who were arrested in Zimbabwe, whether nationalists and South Africans involved. Mm-hmm. Is this training set up in such a way that there is no way that we can sponsor a training that will then backfire on us? Because I don't want to set a house with this evaluation and monitoring and evaluation all the companies have, but to find that, because for me that evaluation and monitoring, if it's done by the people who are from, for instance, the intelligence services or the central government intelligence and military intelligence, or then in that way, if each and every trainer who is given that does not only go through the accreditation is not only based on what is on paper, but also vetting the person himself. I'm not saying I didn't ask that question. It's possible that you do vet the individual himself or yourself, but we want to be sure if that is happening and what happens to those people. And all these people, for instance, that have been trained by this security industry, where? Well, thank you. Is there another speaker? Mm-hmm. Oh, Dan. Members? So I want to thank everybody. You see, for us, we are less than 6 months as members of this committee and as members of parliament. So it is our responsibility to have an interest to watch our entities of government and community, because at the end, you are there assisting the government to deliver to people. And the teachers are specifically there to train to bridge the gap that was created by the previous administration before 1994. So we have to be invested, no matter which committee we are. At the end of the day, the things that you are doing as members of parliament, we must account. When we go to our constituency, people don't say, you can't say, I'm not, that speaker is not under my committee. They don't know that. So it's for us to understand. So it's not like we're putting you on the spot, but it will not be, I don't want to use the right. If you want to correct, you could tell us if we know what you're doing, because we're afraid to ask. We have to know what you're doing, so that we can understand where things that they are yet. Then for us, the women are coming to bridge gap. We might appear half and ask impossible questions, but we have to for us to understand. And thank you for the good work that you have done for the government so far, but of course, the number of years. You see, this question of training of targets. We realize that these targets are there, and these targets, people go over the target. But we are not sure if these targets are bringing them, whether these targets are there for the people. You are saying, we want so much people, and where is this? There's no follow-up in other industries. The train and the people disappear. Time to train people. Somebody said yesterday, we don't want to keep training people who are going to become cleaners. People who are going to become, we want to train people who are going to be decision makers in the economy of this country, for those people who requires after the time. That's what we want. Because if we don't check what is actually saying and what is that coming out of that training, if you're training for the sake of training, that you're training because it's in 15 years' time again, it's still where we are. And we say that our training is the training. But we want to see where we are, what is the basis of training. That's how the people outside will think. I don't want to mention and ask because yesterday I think I asked someone when they were everywhere. But they didn't understand. But what everywhere, each and every school. Then when you ask each school, tell me one school in Mukukulete or in Bonkati, where your people are, and this year, what have they been doing?
The question could not be answered.
It became general. And being a CEO, I mean, there's no way that you can't know who it is. There's a school somewhere in Kukulele, or you don't have, you might not speak different languages. You might not know Sendeka. But if you go, just your information to you, you are able to say, get somebody to get this information and tell them. But if you can't do that, it's clear that you are just told things the time that are there. You see, so. Thank you for whatever contribution that you're making to make a change in the lives of our people. But we want more. Thank you.
They
want to ask the summit.
They spoke about the summit on the 30th and the 5th of October 2009.
Yes.
I just wanted to find out, we as CP committee, what is the possibility that we or some of us can maybe attend this summit? Because I think people will get a lot of goods that can come out of this summit, which will afford us a more hands-on approach.
Yeah.
And we can actually allay that fear of, you know, what's happening, the fact that people don't apply for these money available. Now, through you, Chair, what is the chance that we can attend this summit? And wait.
Just honourable members, through the chair, the date is the 30th of September to the 1st of October. 30th of September, 1st of October. In Johannesburg. I don't know.
In
Gallagher.
You will recall I said there's some other follow-up questions I need to ask. One of the things that I've also depicted is that you mentioned that
I'm going to play around because maybe it was, I stayed with you for too long while I was on the way down here. And then I found, pressed the red button, and then I thought it was starting, the countdown had started. And I checked it every once in a while, and it was still running. Maybe it's still running. Big enough. The meeting was 2 hours.
Is it only day 2?
Yeah.
I just did this one.
Yeah.
I have nothing in time.
Switched on, or doesn't it make a difference? But I know that it's dangerous.
I don't know.
first one. I can answer that.
1 minute.
For the coffee machine, I need to put the toner in place. It says toner needs to place for me.
I'm sure it's the answer.